Shall we get started? Looks like it's about 2 minutes after the hour.
All right. Well, this is Michelle. One moment. Let me get the recording started for you. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 3 Stream Contention Objections and Disputes Call on the 10th of April, 2017 at 20 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. As a reminder, to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the call back over to Robin Gross.
Thank you very much. This is Robin Gross, and I'm co-lead of this work team with Karen Day. And what we're going to focus on today has to do. Well, let me just do the agenda very quickly. Go over SOIs, status update from the plenary chair. Then we'll dig into the heart of our issue for today, community issues, continuing our discussion on community objections, community applications, the community priority evaluation process, in particular, the Council of Europe report. I'm hopeful that we will have someone from the Council of Europe to join the call and answer any questions we might have. We did get a chance to have a very quick overview of it last time, but hopefully we can have someone from Council of Europe on to discuss with us as we talk about the report further. And then, of course, continuing some of the more general issues that we had raised earlier in our discussions on community issues. Some of the things that were on the slides from March 7th is a good place for us to have some good discussion on. And a discussion also of whether or not, based on the experiences that we've had so far, do we think that the costs of community applications outweigh any benefits from the mechanisms? Sort of a pros and cons discussion about the whole concept. And then any other business. So we've got a pretty full agenda today. Is there anyone who has any questions or concerns on this? Comments? Okay, I don't see any hands or hear any voices, so let's just carry on. So as we mentioned, the first issue is the SOIs. If there's anyone who would like to update their statement of interest, SOI, now would be a good time to do that. So please just raise your hand or jump in here. Okay, well, I don't hear anyone on that. So let's go forward right into the meat of the issue today. And we've already begun our discussion on the community issues, but we haven't really dug very deeply into it. And so that's really what I'm hoping we're going to be able to do on today's call, is discuss some of the concerns that have been raised some of the concerns that haven't yet been raised, with respect to the community objections and the applications, the community priority evaluations process. So there's really a lot of issues on the table for people to talk about. But let's go back to the Council of Europe report. I don't know if anyone has had a chance to dig into it and go through it since our last discussion, but it is a pretty meaty report dealing with how, from the Council of Europe's perspective, was the human rights issues treated in the community application process, and it comes out with a number of concerns about how that process was handled. So I'm a little bit leery to just, you know, kind of try to present it myself, because I would prefer to, we had somebody from the Council of Europe to go over it. Is there anyone know if there's any, if anyone on the call here is from the Council of Europe? I don't see anyone in the chat, but maybe there's somebody else I'm missing. Okay, well, I don't see or hear anyone who can answer questions on this report. I'm wondering if maybe we should put it aside until a time when we could confirm that they can participate with us. I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense for us to discuss their report when they're not on the line with us. Okay, looking at the chat here, Paul McGrady says, if no one is here from the Council of Europe, perhaps we should all just read it on our own. Yeah, so I'm sort of thinking that might be the approach as well, and we can come back to this when we've got someone from them, from the Council of Europe on the line. I see I've got a couple hands here. Let me first go to Steve and then Anne. Please, Steve, go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. This is Steve Chan from staff. And perhaps I could put forth a suggestion. Actually, I want to note we did have the Council of Europe, Inanya Peel, I hope I said her name right. She actually did go through the report at a high level, I want to say about a month ago. So we did have a report from them. So I guess one thing that we could consider doing on this call is maybe going through their actual recommendations. They do have sets of recommendations on a number of different areas, like the definition of community, recommendations regarding the community objections, CPE, and the like. So that's one thing we could consider doing in the absence of actually having people from the Council of Europe to discuss the report. So just wanted to make that point.
Thanks, Steve. That's a good idea. Yeah, let's take that under consideration here. Let's get Anne in first. Please, Anne, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Robin. This is Anne Aikman-Scalise for the transcript, and thank you for welcoming me into this group. I've only recently signed up because I just finished work on Human Rights Workstream 2 Framework of Interpretation, in which we had also reviewed to some degree this report, although not, it wasn't really part of our work. I have a question. It's not really a comment. It's regarding the GAC communique that came out of the Copenhagen meeting. There was a statement in the GAC communique that talked about an endorsement of the report that we're talking about here. And I wondered whether this group views that GAC endorsement as, does it constitute GAC consensus advice as it is presented in the GAC communique? Does the staff know, does anybody know for sure whether this report has now been officially endorsed as, you know, in relation to GAC advice?
Thanks, Dan. That's an excellent question. I can tell you what my understanding is that this report is something that we're just looking at in terms of a single input point, a single perspective. It constitutes GAC advice with the capital A, but if somebody disagrees with me, I'd sure like to hear it.
Yeah, just
okay. I see.
It looked like GAC advice to me. That's all I was going to say. It's Anne again, but I'll see what Aubrey has to say. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Aubrey speaking. I am also not absolutely positive that it is GAC advice, but I think it's pretty darn close to it. if it isn't actually GAC advice. I have to go back and check and see whether they actually endorse it, consider the CEOE report as advice, or they're advising it strong consideration. So I'll go back and check. I don't know if we have any of our GAC knowledgeable folks on the call, so I'll confirm it. But I think that we have to give it a sort of strong consideration, as even if it's not GAC advice, it could easily become that. So it may be worth going through some of the topics that Emily has been indicating. And I see Paul's message about nice to have someone from the COE. I know they were here at the previous call when we discussed it, and I'm not certain that we managed to communicate well the importance of them being here at all the calls when we were discussing it, but we'll certainly go back to them and find out what's going on. They certainly have said that they are interested in being here whenever they need to be, so I'm not quite sure what happened today. Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much. In terms of discussing the report, let's go forward with a few of the recommendations at least, because I think, you know, we can have some discussion as to whether or not we think some of these recommendations are things that we'd be taking on board. So let's take, for example, on the topic of the notion of community and the public interest. One of the things that the Council of Europe report recommended was that we define a clear and consistent definition of community. I think some of the ambiguity around that term has caused some frustrations for people. Also, possibly reassess the criteria and guidance as formulated in the AGB and the CPE guidelines in the light of the spirit of the GNSO policy recommendations. We could consider instruct and train delegated decision makers, such as experts and panels, deciding on community objections and CPE to interpret the cases before them in light of the purpose for which community-based applications were enacted. The Council also suggests that we provide clarity on the public interest values community TLDs are intended to serve. Okay, so that's, you know, four pretty meaty recommendations there with respect to the notions of community and public interest. So we've got a good number of people on today's call. We don't have the Council of Europe on today's call, but I think we could have some meaningful discussion here about what do folks think about some of these recommendations that the Council of Europe has proposed and which may or may not constitute GAC advice. Okay, let me open up the floor. Does anyone think some of these recommendations are absolutely yes or absolutely no, or it depends on how you do it, and these are the following concerns? Anybody have anything to add on this? Okay, well, let me take off my co-lead on this point here, and I'll just sort of weigh in and express some agreement with at least the first one here, with the need to define clear and consistent definition of community. I think that is something that has caused a good deal of frustration among a number of applicants, and just trying to figure it out on the fly, definitions of these concepts that were created in the new GTLD application process, the fuzziness and a little bit of ambiguity around them when they aren't legal concepts has been part of the cause of concern that some folks have had. So let me just see if I can say something like that and maybe spur a little bit of discussion on that particular issue. Okay, let me open it up. I see Steve's got his hand up. Please, Steve, go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. This is Steve again from staff, and I wasn't going to discuss the substance other than to just say that unequivocally that this report does not constitute GAC advice. From my understanding, the GAC did say that they would like the PDP to consider it, but it does not constitute GAC advice. It's actually in a separate section of the GAC communique. And if I recall correctly from Kanina's report, the way that even the Council of Europe would look at this report is something that they prepared, but it's, I believe, not even endorsed by the Council of Europe. So that certainly doesn't preclude us from taking it as an input to our discussions. But in terms of the question about whether or not this constitutes GAC advice, it's definitely a no.
Okay, thanks very much for that a very clear clarification of that issue, Steve. All right, I see Paul's got his hand up. Please, Paul, come.
Thanks, Paul McGrady for the record. Steve, thank you for that clarification on both the whether or not this is GAC advice and whether or not this was endorsed by the overall Council of Europe or whether it was just by other auspices. That having been said, all four of these things are really smart people things to say, right? And I think they do go to issues that everybody felt led to a lot of, as Robin said, ambiguity in the last process, or fuzziness, I think is an even better word. I think that's what Robin said. And so I think that even if it's not GAC advice, and even if it's not from the Council of Europe proper, I still think it makes sense to plug through these and look at them one by one. And you know, start with the first one that Robin's already brought up, which is define a clear and consistent definition of community. I think this was probably the number one irritant because it seemed to me as an outsider on some of these community-based applications that we had people who were, you know, could barely claim to be some sort of community and they were waltzing through, while we had other people that were clearly a community that had a real need, an obvious need for one of these TLDs for their community, and they had the darndest time getting through, and some of them were even blocked, I think. And so maybe we should pull forward the current definition since we're on this bullet point and spend some time tinkering with it. Thanks.
Thanks very much for that, Paul. Yeah, I think that's right. And if I could just sort of add my own opinion as to sort of why I think that it's a bit of a problematic word, community, is because it is a thing that exists in sort of a legal understanding. These are not legal rights that we can actually clearly define. We're sort of creating this new concept of these new rights, and without having sort of something to pin that on, like precedent, or even something that's clearly defined that says here you're in or here you're out, in the sense that the law provides for other legal rights, I think that's part of the problem why this concept creates so much trouble, is because it isn't something that is a that you fall back on rights that actually exist in law. That's just my own opinion. Paul says, Robin, is it a new right, or is it often already the rights of like-minded people to assemble? Okay, I see. I'm not sure that's something to be answered or to ponder and consider for a while. I see Avery's got her hand up. Please, Avery, come in.
Yeah, and this is speaking from my own opinion and not as one of the co-chairs of the PDP working group, is that very much it has based itself on you know, a human rights consideration and the right of assembly and association within the internet space. And I think that, you know, when you read the COE report and others, that fundamental right is one of the considerations that they are pulling on. So in terms of that probably affects our definition. I think it's a good idea to pull out the definition as recommended by the AG AGB and the CPE guideline, and also, though, to look at some of the significance as we go along in the way the decision was made, that there wasn't really so much an extrinsic definition of community, if I'm remembering correctly. It was more if you pass a test. And the test was developed prior to really there being a definition of community, because in the policy that came before the AGB, there had not been great specificity as to community other than its long institutional existence before the time of the application. So there was a notion that a community existed, that it didn't come into being for an application, but it was something that had some historical existence. But beyond that, what really ended up happening is that the test sort of defined what was community. And I think that was, for many people, very problematic, because a test is a very crude instrument. And as Paul said, some people pass the test easily, that on reflection you go, are they a community? Whereas others, who there seemed to be very little doubt in a large number of people's minds that they were a community, couldn't pass the test. And so there's both coming up with, you know, an extrinsic definition that sort of, you know, declares what we mean by a community that goes beyond where the previous recommendation went. And then looking at how do you determine that? Is the AGB points-based test really the right way to do that? Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Avery. So it sounds like it might be worth our while to take a look at the test that applicants are asked to take, and, you know, sort of think backwards and say, okay, well, what does this mean they have to do, what kind of steps to take, and how does that apply to our own understanding about what we intended or do intend when we say community in this context. Is there anybody else who would like to get in the queue on this topic? We're talking about the concept of defining a more clear and consistent definition of community. Okay, I see Alan's got his hand up. Please, Alan, come in.
Thank you very much. I think one of the problems is there was never any clarity on how wide or pervasive the community had to be. You know, was it the community of X's around the world? Was it a reasonable community of X's, you know, subsetted in some parts of the world? Or, you know, without that level of clarity, or at least explicitly thinking any of those are okay, it left far too much discretion up to the people judging whether this, in fact, met their view of the community. And so, if nothing else, we're going to have to be a lot more specific on how to recognize a community and what disallows a community. I don't have the magic answers. I personally think we need a lot of flexibility in this and not reject communities because they don't meet today's definition by the one person who's doing the judging. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I mean, yeah, let's maybe for just a second take a step back and say, okay, what is it that we're trying to accomplish by the creation of this concept? What is the ultimate goal, the ultimate public interest objective that we will be achieved by creating this concept and applying it in certain circumstances? And you know, really try to think from that sort of high-level picture of, okay, what fits within that, what doesn't fit within that, where do some of the gray areas come from? Okay, I don't see any other hands. Anybody else want to weigh in on this? All right, I see Alan's got his hand up.
Sorry,
please, Alan.
I'm going to make up for missing the first half of the meeting.
All right, go ahead.
I don't have magic answers, but why do we want them at all is a really good question. From my perspective, I think we want them because we want some level of certainty. I mean, this was actually being discussed earlier today on the new GTLD plenary when we were talking about the consumer trust review, and can people have expectations from certain TLDs? And in the general case, in the non-community case, at this point, you can't. A registry may voluntarily do something or they may not. Maybe in the next round or next whatever it's going to be, there will be some controls on some classes of TLDs. But this gives you the ability of the community to set what the expectations are and what the rules are. So it's no longer a commercial venture or purely a commercial venture, but is presumably meeting the needs of whatever the community is in going forward. So it sets a whole level of expectations and perhaps controls on what the TLD can do. And I think that makes a huge difference and certainly is one of the reasons that I support the concept. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. Is there somebody else who wants to get in the queue on this? Okay, I don't see any other hands or hear any other voices. So let me just go forward in the Europe report because they do recommend some very specific things for how the community priority evaluation process can be improved. And so, you know, that sort of segues in nicely into these recommendations. Okay, but before I do that, let me go to Anne, who's got her hand up. Please, Anne, come in.
Yes, thank you, Robin and Sam, for the transcript. I think as we're talking about community priority evaluations, one thing to keep in mind in relation to the Council of Europe report is it actually recommends a priority round for community applications. So if that recommendation were endorsed in any way, there would be a kind of a different process because it wouldn't be considering community applications against applications which are not community-based. It might be considering community applications that are competing against each other for the same string. Now, I realize that's a difficult topic to try to address, but I'm just noting that that is one of the recommendations.
Great. Thanks very much. And I see we've got a queue forming now on this. We've got Paul and then Avery. Please, Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. And Anne, thank you. This is Paul McGrady for the record. Anne, thank you for raising that issue, which is, I think, one of the thorny threshold questions here we're all going to have to think about is whether or not these kinds of priority rounds make sense. And how do you balance that off against other kinds of other kinds of things that the organization may, you know, ICANN may wish to accomplish. So for example, and again, I don't know if this TLD is already taken or not, there's too many, but, you know, it would be interesting to see how you balance, one string that a community's claiming. I think of, the Fraternal Order of Police may apply for dot police, right? But what happens if Sting's old band applies for it too? How do we treat that sort of situation with nuance and fairness? So we're probably jumping way ahead to talk about whether or not there would be a priority round. We probably should figure out some of these other things like the definitions and changes to the test. But, Anne, I think it was great that you raised it because we do need to keep in mind that if we're going to head down that path, we should be considering it now as we're laying the groundwork changes. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, I think that's really true and an important reminder because, you know, we spend a lot of time right now talking about the details of the issues of the tests, and maybe there'll come a point in time where we say we want to do a whole separate thing. And I would think we wouldn't do that even if we thought it was the right thing to do because we're so invested in all these little details that we've been working on. So I do want to caution us to always keep sort of the big picture in mind and, you know, think about how do we want to sort of set this up. Do we, if we decide that there are certain kinds of applications that we want to prioritize, how do we do that? What's the best way to do that? Okay, let's see, Aubrey next in the queue. Please, Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Aubrey speaking. So I think, yeah, the whole prioritization and do we do special rounds for things is a subject that comes later. But whether we are considering community within a fixed time period as just one characteristic that a kind of application might have, or we were deciding to do a special offering that was just supposed to be this, we would still need that definition. Whether it was to decide whether a particular application did meet the conditions in a situation of multiple kinds of that, or we were deciding that there was indeed a special event just for a communities, the need for a definition of what a community is and how we distinguish remains, I think, the same. It's the same problem. It's just what do we use it for? Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this issue, or should we go on to discussing some of the very specific recommendations that the Council of Europe had with respect to the Community Priority Evaluation Process, the CPE? Okay, well, let's go forward with that. Some of the things that the Council of Europe recommended with respect to the CPE are reducing the cost for CBAs for future GTLD rounds, establish and publish clear time deadlines for the various stages of the application process, accountability mechanisms, and any appeal mechanisms for future GTLD rounds in order to further due process, manage expectations, and enable a degree of accountability. Take care to ensure appearances of conflicts of interest are minimized. Consider whether ICANN should provide dedicated staff assistance to CBAs. Take greater care to keep CBAs informed about anything which affects the progress of their application. Have a clear set of definitions or guidance. Somebody trying to get in on the call here? Okay, just make sure you're muted if you're not speaking. Have a clear set of definitions and or guidance that works across different but related ICANN processes to reduce apparent inconsistency. In any future new GTLD rounds, that post hoc guidance is not issued in such a way as to give an impression of unfairness. Either reevaluate the scoring system and points to lower bar or develop a new process altogether for assessing community applicants. And finally, full registry conditions, including key elements of the application and any additional public interest commitments, should be published to enable ongoing monitoring by stakeholders to ensure compliance by the applicant to the community to which it is accountable. Okay, so here we've got quite a slew of very meaty recommendations that the Council of Europe believes could improve the community priority evaluation process. And here's our chance to discuss them and see if there are any of these that people are in agreement with or in disagreement with or have concerns or would otherwise like to discuss. Please jump on into the discussion. Okay, well, what about the cost for the CBAs for future GTLD rounds, reducing those costs? Is that something that people feel is an important improvement or could be an important improvement in the community priority evaluation process? Okay, I see a couple hands up here. We've got Aubrey and then Alan. Please, Aubrey, go ahead.
Okay. This is Aubrey. I guess one question on that. I think this is something we probably need to answer, but it's also answering it in the consideration whether we will have differential fees for various things. So I think there's a general question, and that may be a subgroup one topic, I'm not sure, I think it would be, on whether there are differential fees. And then, so the question would be, if we're doing something with differential fees, whether this is a category in which you would recommend them. You know, taking off chair hat, I would certainly think, and speaking personally, I would think that indeed this would be a worthwhile consideration, perhaps a means testing of some sort, because there are rich communities and there are poor communities. So you might not want to do a blanket for all communities. But if we decide as a general program thing that we're going to recommend differential fees, then I think it would be worth considering some sort of means testing or what have you for communities. Thanks.
Great. Thanks very much, Avery. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. I was going to say that definitely there should be differential fees, but something Avery mentioned caused something to click. I'm not sure I would want a means test, but I would certainly differentiate communities of for-profit entities, you know, banks as an example, from communities that are true, what I would consider true communities of individuals, or, you know, something that is clearly not there is no profit orientation in the entire endeavor. So that I would certainly differentiate. And I think, yes, for true communities of individuals, whether it's cultural or language or something else, I think differential fees make a lot of sense. One of the reasons we do communities is because ICANN is supposed to have an interest in the public interest, not just making sure that we have a vibrant commercial market. So that certainly gives a strong push to differential fees for some classes of community applicants. What I raise my hand for, however, is to suggest that we take this list of recommendations and differentiate between those that apply to everything. You know, we should have clear timelines. We should have definitions of the terms. We shouldn't treat one group preferentially over another group. I think those are general statements that apply to the entire process of issuing new GTLDs. And then there are a couple, such as the evaluation process and what the scoring system is that clearly just apply to the community one. So I think separating them into two piles would make this discussion an awful lot easier. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan, and that's a really good point that a lot of these recommendations could be improvements throughout all the different kinds of applications, not just with respect to community. Okay, I see Anne's got her hand up. Please, Anne, go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. It's Anne for the transcript. There seems to be a sort of a general impression in the community observations about the fact that there just, you know, weren't enough grants of community applications, and there weren't enough applications themselves. So it feels like, well, gee, how can we encourage, you know, more of these community applications? And I think that on the specific topic of reducing fees for community applicants, I think that implicates the definitions in the applicant support program, because I think if we want to encourage more community applications, particularly in the nonprofit arena, for example, you know, we have to talk about in what way are we able to support and help develop those community applications, not only under applicant support guidelines, but also, again, with respect to staff, I think as mentioned below, is there, you know, assistance available to help encourage community applications. But we don't actually have a lot of data, I don't think, on communities that would have applied or why they didn't apply, and what, you know, I guess one question I think for the group is, how are we going to get, you know, that data? Hey, I feel like that, you know, we represent a community or whatever from some quarter, and we didn't apply because $185,000 is too much. So first comment, applicant support program is affected, I think, by this. Second comment, how do we be a data-driven ICANN on the subject of communities that would apply if they had this kind of help. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne, and thanks again for sort of reminding us to think about this all in a very big picture and holistic ICANN community-wide sort of way. When I look at the list of recommendations in front of us are very specific to released from the Council of Europe report on the community priority evaluation, one that stands out that, in my view, is specific to the CEPEs and isn't a recommendation that could be applied so easily across the board is the one about that says either reevaluate the scoring system and points to allow the bar, to lower the bar, or develop a new process altogether for assisting community applicants. So what do folks think about the idea here that we should reevaluate the scoring system and consider lowering the bar? Does this sound like a good idea? I mean, when we say lower the bar, it's like there's almost two ways you can look at it. You could look at it from the perspective of, say, the subject of the community and the ease with which you want to provide special rights and special privileges for the top-level domain for this targeted group of people or businesses or whatnot. That's one perspective. And then the other perspective is basically everyone else in the world and the right and the interest that they might have in registering a TLD, and to what extent is it fair or appropriate that this other group of people should have privileges or greater rights to register that TLD. So, you know, it's kind of important to sort of think about it from both sides of the equation in terms of when we come up with these kinds of the processes that give these special rights to certain groups. Do we think that we need to lower the bar to make it easier for targeted groups to be able to register, or at the same time prevent others from registering certain TLDs? So, okay, with that, let me go to the queue here. We've got Avri. Avri, please go ahead.
Thank you. And without a co-chair's hat. First of all, I think calling it lowering the bar is actually a prejudicial way of putting it. I think it's more in terms of being more reasonable about how we go about giving these sort of tests. The CPE test was one of the earlier ones created. Now, one of the problems that people had all the way through with it was its very discrete numbering system. In other words, one lost always a whole point. There was never any nuance that could be measured in these things. So I think that's one important consideration, that you're not necessarily lowering the bar. You're basically making the test and its results much more reasonable, much more statistically valid to talk about in terms of the testing. I think when you talk about special rights, you're also talking about groups that often have special liabilities. And so it's not really a special right. It's a redress in many cases for many of these communities that are persecuted communities. So I think that's an important part of this to remember. So when we're trying to paint with a broad brush and basically, you know, just looking at the right to use a name in any way you want, sometimes a name, and that's that whole nexus issue that you get into, sometimes a name is so associated with a community that using it in other contexts becomes a harm to a group that is already under pressure. So that kind of thing really needs to be taken into account in these things, in these nexus. And so that goes back again to, I do think that the tool needs to be redesigned. It needs to be more sensitive. If you get go digging down into the tool and how they interpreted nexus and how it was always a binary decision with very little leeway in the testing, a very sharp and abrupt cutoff without nuance, I think there's a lot to fix there. Thanks.
Great. Thanks very much, Aubrey. Is there anyone else who wants to get on in the queue on this? I think, you know, sometimes just going back to, again, what we talked for in terms of what is our ultimate goal, what is our ultimate objective when we talk about communities. And, you know, some people say, oh, well, we're trying to help people who are persecuted, or we're trying to help underprivileged people, underfunded people. And then you talk to somebody else about their idea of what this means, and they say, oh, well, sure, community of banks is fine, or community of dog owners is fine. And so, you know, we've got such a different understanding amongst ourselves about what is it that we're actually trying to achieve here. Are we trying to help the persecuted, or are we trying to establish an association of industry organizations? And it seems to me that until we sort of answer these big picture questions about what is it that we're trying to achieve here, you know, filling out the details is putting the cart before the horse, so to speak. Okay, but that's just my own sort of thoughts for the moment. Let me go to the queue. Alan, please come in.
Thank you. I'll go back to something I mentioned before, because every triggered it. It's not only the nuance, and although what she says is definitely relevant, but it's also a set of what are reasonable expectations. You know, if you can only get .kids, if you can demonstrate you represent every kid in the world, we're never going to have a .kids. And on the other hand, representing, you know, 12 in my hometown is probably not sufficient. So I don't know whether we're going to need examples or ranges or whatever, but I think we have to set reasonable expectations that tell people who are applying for a community application what is likely to succeed and what is not likely to succeed, because the lack of specificity caused a significant number of the problems in the first round. So, again, it comes down to definitions, and obviously we're going to argue a lot over what the definition should be when we come to that stage. But I think we need to set expectations reasonably when we go forward with this. Thank you. Have we lost Robin?
I don't know, Robin, you said that.
Next in the queue is Aubrey. Aubrey, please go ahead.
Okay, thanks. This is Aubrey again. I think from what Alan just said, one of the things in terms of gathering data that may be useful for this points discussion is to actually go through the CPE responses and find out how the points, you know, what sort of things that people actually lose points for. And see if we can get some standing at that point on how the grading system is used, because it's all well and good to say, you know, I think there was a problem using it, and it's certainly something that without chair hat I say, and from personal experience believe it to be the case. But in terms of an overview picture of how these things were applied, now I understand that, you know, we may want to hold off slightly in terms of doing that, because the board has requested a complete review of, as I understand it, the CPE grading and how the CPE judgment was done. And so we may want to go further on CPE and points and calculations after we've seen the results of that study. And I don't have the exact definition of the study, but it was based on just the number of appeals that they were getting about the way the CPE work was done by the external provider, that the board has requested a second opinion, as it were. I don't have the details on that, but that's something we should figure in. Thanks.
Chowdhury. Can you hear me okay this time? Can you folks hear me?
I can hear you.
Last time it looked like there was some difficulty being heard. Okay. So what about the last recommendation on the screen here? Full registry conditions, including key elements of the application and any additional public interest commitments, should be published to enable ongoing monitoring by stakeholders to ensure compliance by the applicant and the community to which it is accountable. What do folks think about this particular recommendation? It might be an aid to assist with ongoing compliance and understanding with the rest of the community about what the expectations are with respect to a certain TLD. That's one possibility. Okay, I see Steve's got his hand up. Please, Steve, come in.
Thank you, Robin. This is Steve Chan from staff. And I actually put a note into the chat a while ago, and it's staff's understanding that this recommendation is already met. The commitments that the community makes is captured in Spec 12 of the registry agreement. And then also the PICs are actually captured in Spec 11 of the registry agreement. And, of course, the registry agreements are all public and available for review. As far as we understand, that one's actually already met.
Okay, terrific. Thanks very much. That's a very important clarification there. All right, so did anybody else want to get in on some of these community priority evaluation recommendations, some of the specific ones that the Council of Europe has brought to our attention in their report? Okay, I don't see any hands. Let's go to the back to sort of this big issue of do we think that the benefits of the community application concept outweighs any cost? Were we able to achieve what we wanted to achieve, or perhaps does it create more problems than it actually solves, or even some might say is a remedy that's worse than the disease? So let me just open the floor to that kind of big picture issue about the community application process, and also, if I can, ask people to tie it back to the idea of what is it that we're trying to achieve here. And because I think if we have different ideas about what we're trying to achieve, then I think we're all going to have, ultimately, everything else we're trying to do as a result is going to be in discord as well. Alan, please, go ahead.
Well, I don't think we achieve what we are trying to achieve sufficiently because of the number of applications that were rejected that some of us individually felt should have gone through and didn't. So clearly on a very subjective level, it did not achieve enough of what we were trying to achieve. I think there are a few examples of ones that went through that are indeed community applications. And even the commercial ones, I think, if they are governed on an ongoing basis by their members, so to speak, then I think they meet the target. Whether it's worth the cost, I personally think it is. I don't know how we even measure what the cost is. One could claim that there is a cost on the commercial side of any community application going through to a big community TLD not being a commercial venture, and therefore, the world loses out on the profit associated with it. I think it completely echoes ICANN's desire to serve the public interest and is indeed something we should be continuing to do. So, again, a very personal perspective. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. Appreciate that. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this point? is our community application. Can you hear me?
Avery's comment in the chat, I think, addresses it.
Ah, okay, I'm sorry. Let me read that out. Avery says that the benefits of supporting communities is an essential part of the requires of a corporation in the public interest. That outweighs most costs. Okay. But again, I sort of feel like we're being a little bit circular in our definitions here because we say the benefits of supporting communities is in the public interest, but we haven't defined what, without a clear definition of what we're supporting, it just seems to be a bit of a circular logic. And so until we can agree that this specific discrete group of people or organizations or interests are something that we believe we want to set apart and create privileges for in the TLD space, then we go forward with that in our minds about this discrete group is of interest or groups or of individuals are what we're trying to help here, trying to privilege in this process. And until that happens, I just wonder, you know, if we're just sort of spinning wheels on some of the underlying issues. But that's just my own point of view. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this? We've got one more minute before our time is officially over. Okay, well, I don't see or hear anything else on this. So let's go on to the any other business. Is there anything anyone else wanted to raise on this? All right, not seeing anything there. Looks like we're going to end about 30 seconds ahead of our schedule today. So thank you all very much for participating. I do appreciate it, and we will pick up the discussion next time, as well as on the mailing list, and I very much appreciate your input today. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks, everyone. Bye.